solution with problems to a vision of opportunity, from concern with weakness to exploitation of strengths. This, in turn, wherever it happens, makes an organization attractive to people of high ability and aspiration and motivates people to higher performance and higher dedication. Organizations are not more effective because they have better people. They have better people because they motivate to self-development through their standards, through their habits, through their climate. And these, in turn, result from systematic, focused, purposeful self-training of the individuals in becoming effective executives. Modern society depends for its functioning, if not for its survival, on the effectiveness of large-scale organizations, on their performance and results, on their values, standards, and self-demands. Organization performance has become decisive well beyond the economic sphere or even the social sphere, for instance, in education, in healthcare, and in the advancement of knowledge. Increasingly, the large-scale organization that counts is the knowledge organization, employing knowledge workers and staffed heavily with men and women who have to perform as executives, men and women who have in their own work to assume responsibility for the results of the whole, and who, by the nature of their knowledge and work, make decisions with impact upon the results and performance of the whole. Effective organizations are not common. They're even rarer than effective executives. There are shining examples here and there, but on the whole, organization performance is still primitive. Enormous resources are brought together in the modern large business, in the modern large government agency, in the modern large hospital, or in the university, yet far too much of the result is mediocrity. Far too much is splintering of efforts. Far too much is devoted to yesterday or to avoiding decision and action. Organizations as well as executives need to work systematically on effectiveness and need to acquire the habit of effectiveness. They need to learn to feed their opportunities and to starve their problems. They need to work on making strength productive. They need to concentrate and to set priorities instead of trying to do a little bit of everything. But executive effectiveness is surely one of the basic requirements of effective organization and in itself a most important contribution toward organization development. Executive effectiveness is our one best hope to make modern society productive economically and viable socially. The knowledge worker, as has been said again and again in this audiobook, is rapidly becoming the major resource of the developed countries. He's becoming the major investment, for education is the most expensive investment of them all. He's becoming the major cost center. To make the knowledge worker productive is the specific economic need of an industrially developed society. In such a society, the manual worker is not competitive in his costs with manual workers in underdeveloped or developing countries. Only productivity of the knowledge worker can make it possible for developed countries to maintain their high standard of living against the competition of low-wage developing economies. So far, only a super-optimist would be reassured as to the productivity of the knowledge worker in the industrially developed countries. The tremendous shift of the center of gravity in the workforce from manual to knowledge work that has taken place since World War II has not, I submit, shown extraordinary results. By and large, neither the increase in productivity nor the increase in profitability, the two yardsticks that measure economic results, has shown marked acceleration. No matter how well the industrially developed countries have done since World War II, and their record has been impressive, the job of making the knowledge worker productive is still ahead. The key to it is surely the effectiveness of the executive, for the executive is himself the decisive knowledge worker. His level, his standards, his demands on himself determine to a large extent the motivation, the direction, the dedication of the other knowledge workers around him. Even more important is the social need for executive effectiveness. The cohesion and strength of our society depend increasingly on the integration of the psychological and social needs of the knowledge worker with the goals of organization and of industrial society. The knowledge worker normally is not an economic problem. He tends to be affluent, he has high job security, and his very knowledge gives him freedom to move. But his psychological needs and personal values need to be satisfied in and through his work and position in the organization. He's considered and considers himself a professional, yet he is an employee and under orders. He is beholden to a knowledge area, yet he has to subordinate the authority of knowledge to organizational objectives and goals. In a knowledge area, there are no superiors or subordinates. There are only older and younger men, yet organization requires a hierarchy. These are not entirely new problems, to be sure. Officer corps and civil service have known them for a long time and have known how to resolve them, but they are real problems. The knowledge worker is not poverty-prone. He is in danger of alienation, to use the fashionable word for boredom, frustration, and silent despair. Just as the economic conflict between the needs of the manual worker and the role of an expanding economy was the social question of the 19th century in the developing countries, so the position, function, and fulfillment of the knowledge worker is the social question of the 20th century in these countries now that they are developed. It is not a question that will go away if we deny its existence. To assert, as do in their own way both orthodox economists and Marxists, that only the objective reality of economic and social performance exists will not make the problem go away. Nor, however, will the new romanticism of the social psychologists, e.g., Professor Chris Argyris at Yale, who quite rightly point out that organizational goals are not automatically individual fulfillment, and therefrom conclude that we had better sweep them aside. We will have to satisfy both the objective needs of society for performance by the organization and the needs of the person for achievement and fulfillment. Self-development of the executive toward effectiveness is the only available answer. It's the only way in which organization goals and individual needs can come together. The executive who works at making strengths productive, his own as well as those of others, works at making organizational performance compatible with personal achievement. He works at making his knowledge area become organizational opportunity, and by focusing on contribution, he makes his own values become organization results. The manual worker, so at least the 19th century believed, had only economic goals and was content with economic rewards. That, as the human relations school demonstrated, was far from the whole truth. It certainly ceased to be true the moment pay went above the subsistence level. The knowledge worker demands economic rewards too. Their absence is a deterrent, but their presence isn't enough. He needs opportunity. He needs achievement. He needs fulfillment. He needs values. Only by making himself an effective executive can the knowledge worker obtain these satisfactions. Only executive effectiveness can enable this society to harmonize its two needs. The needs of organization to obtain from the individual the contribution it needs, and the need of the individual to have organization serve as his tool for the accomplishment of his purposes. Effectiveness must be learned. Afterword to the 50th anniversary edition of The Effective Executive. Don't tell me you had a wonderful meeting with me. By Zachary First. When Peter Drucker was asked at the end of his long life what his greatest contribution was, he answered, "What I would say is I helped a few good people be effective in doing the right things." Of the millions of words Drucker wrote through six groundbreaking decades, not one is more important than effective. Effectiveness, he said, is doing the right things well. This is a definition much richer than the conventional wisdom that effectiveness simply means getting things done. Indeed, this audiobook asks you to be yourself, to aim beyond yourself, and to work with courage. Being yourself means identifying and building on your own unique strengths. From 1980 through 2003, the investment firm Edward Jones retained Peter Drucker as consultant, advisor, and teacher for its top executives. During that time, the company grew from 200 offices in 28 U.S. states to more than 9,000 offices throughout the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. Early on, Edward Jones's managing partner wrote to Drucker that he and his team had read Drucker's 1973 classic, Management, Tasks, Responsibilities, Practices, so many times that, quote, "our copies are literally worn out," end quote. Drucker replied, "I have only one negative comment, but a pretty important one. Stop talking about Druckerizing your organization. Indeed, stop reading in very dubious sources. The job ahead of you is to Jonesize your organization, and only if you accept this would I be of any help to you. Otherwise, I would rapidly become a menace, which I refuse to be." For Edward Jones, this translated into using Drucker's teachings not to become a generically effective company, but rather to more effectively carry out the company's distinctive mission of democratizing investing and financial planning. Distinctiveness alone, however, is not a sufficient guiding principle. The great majority of executives, Drucker writes, are occupied with efforts rather than with results. They worry over what the organization and their superiors owe them and should do for them, and they are conscious above all of the authority they should have. As a result, they render themselves ineffectual. The effective executive aims beyond himself by focusing on contribution. This requires turning one's attention away from one's own specialty, one's own narrow skills, one's own department, Drucker writes, and toward the performance of the whole. In his book, The Practice of Management, Drucker retells a favorite story about three stonecutters who were asked what they were doing. The first replied, "I am making a living." The second kept on hammering while he said, "I am doing the best job of stonecutting in the entire country." The third one looked up with a visionary gleam in his eyes and said, "I am building a cathedral." The last person is the one who is ready for effectiveness. He is focused outward on contribution. It is likely, of course, that along the way he will make a living. He may even become the best stonecutter in the country. But for the effective executive, gain and glory are only ever side effects of doing the right things well. Still, for the stonecutter, it all begins by getting to work shaping stone, and so too for you and me. Effectiveness, Drucker writes again and again, demands doing. The timeless wisdom in the effective executive is meant to be used, not merely read and admired. Don Keogh, the legendarily effective former president of the Coca-Cola Company, was one of Drucker's consulting clients. Recalling their time together, Keogh said, "He would tell me after each session, 'Don't tell me you had a wonderful meeting with me. Tell me what you are going to do on Monday that's different.'" As executives like Keogh often found, Drucker's challenge to make Monday different was deceptively tough. It requires figuring out not only what you should do, but also what you shouldn't. Ultimately, the effective executive must set a large number of posteriorities, tasks one chooses not to tackle, so as to focus with exquisite clarity on a small number of priorities. This is a daunting proposition, especially in today's world, which is awash in data, information, and knowledge. No matter how smart a list of posteriorities and priorities, it seems that one could always be smarter. In one of the effective executive's most striking passages, however, Drucker writes, "The most important thing about priorities and posteriorities is not intelligent analysis, but courage. Aiming first to be smart is a deadly sin for an executive, every bit as detrimental as preoccupation with one's own interests, talents, power, or position. Although analysis should always shape and inform action, it can't provide the initial spark required to create action. Courage is what serves that special purpose. Without courage, an executive in possession of the most brilliant idea in history can only ponder what might be. With courage, knowledge becomes productive. For Drucker, courage is more than mere motion in the face of uncertainty. Courage manifests in four specific ways of taking action. Pick the future as against the past. Focus on opportunity rather than on problem. Choose your own direction rather than climb on the bandwagon. And aim high. Aim for something that will make a difference rather than for something that is safe and easy to do. Long before Drucker wrote The Effective Executive, he was a young man fleeing totalitarianism in search of a way to defeat it. He didn't create the discipline of management because it was a smart idea. He created it because he had the courage to ask what he could do to strengthen the institutions of society, and thus society itself, against the horrors of the 20th century. The effective executive is an expression of Drucker's courageous choices to focus on society's future possibilities as against its past tragedies, on the opportunities management created, not the problems it solved, on his own direction by advocating for a humanistic practice of management, and on the high aim to make society both more productive and more humane. The effective executive is, in short, Drucker's gift to you so that you can learn to be yourself, to aim beyond yourself, and to work with courage. Now don't tell me you had a wonderful time listening to this audiobook. Tell me instead, what will you do on Monday that's different? Zachary First, Claremont, California, May 31st, 2016. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Effective Executive, the definitive guide to getting the right things done, 50th Anniversary Edition by Peter Drucker. Read by Tim Andres Pabon, with a foreword written and read by Jim Collins. This program was produced by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer, Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright, 1967, 1985, 1996, 2002, 2006, 2017 by Peter F. Drucker. Forward copyright 2017 by Jim Collins. Afterward copyright 2017 by Zachary First. Production copyright 2017 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.